Hi, this is Ray Nenzel recording for SeavillePodcast.com. Radio shows, interviews, and a whole lot more at SeavillePodcast.com. I'm here with Mendy St. Hours. Hi, Mendy.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Mendy is the director of Thy Matchmaker, or the director of Matchmaker, which is opening March 6th in less than a week at Live Arts on the Downstage. So, Mendy, let me ask you first, when did you first read the play, Matchmaker?
I first read the play when I was on the Live Arts Programming Committee last year. It was early on in our process, so it was either the fall or the winter. And it was the first play that everyone on the committee read and all said yes to. And you've been on the committee before, so you know how hard it is to come by the ones that get a go-ahead all the way around.
Yeah, it's tough to find a good play that a lot of people can agree on. But I think The Matchmaker did that. I think The Matchmaker did that because I know that you had a very good turnout at auditions.
Yes, very good. I'm a very lucky girl.
And you have assembled a very fine cast.
Yes.
Some of which we'll be able to talk with later. So when you read the play, till now, anything on that journey stand out?
The first thing we loved about the play is that we all had a really wonderful laugh. And it really felt that we're coming off of a darker season, and it just made us really, really happy. But something really lovely about the play, too, that it's not just a frivolous laugh fest, if you will. It's also very smart, and there's a lot about economy and about maneuvering your own happiness. So what I worked on, what I first work on with any play is basically trying to read the play pretty much an average of three times a week. This is from when I knew I was directing it, which was the spring and into the summer. And then trying to get to know the playwright as much as possible. So I read almost everything I could get my hands on.
And the playwright is Thornton Wilder?
That's right.
So you read other works by Thornton Wilder too?
Yes.
And reread the play, and why? I mean, it might be obvious why, but why particularly for you? Is that a good exercise? Preparation?
I think it depends on the playwright. I certainly found when I played Maggie in Cat in a Hot Tin Roof that it was very important to know who Tennessee is because he put so much of his heart into his work. And I think the same about Thornton Wilder. And he talks about the spectrum of human history and experience as being one long story. And that's what he's interested in, not the little things that happen here and there, but how are all of our stories woven together. So yeah, I thought it was very important, and it was very enlightening to learn about him as a man and his heart and what he felt was important.
And so Thornton Wilder also wrote Our Town, probably one of the most famous American dramas. No.
Yeah, and you know,
or most done.
Yeah, most done. I think because the staging is so easy, it lends itself towards, you know, high school productions, and it's a really lovely play. But because it's done so often, I think it gets this reputation as getting just being this high school play that kids do. And that's one thing I thought of going into it. What are people going to expect from me? What are they going to expect from Thornton Wilder, having been much more familiar with Our Town and Hello, Dolly, which I still haven't seen?
And Hello, Dolly is the musical that is based on Matchmaker.
Yes. But just making sure that we owned it and made it our own. And coming at it, straight through the text and not our preconceptions of what it should be and what it shouldn't be.
So that's Thornton Wilder, and I have to say that a lot of the modern playwrights that I know list Thornton Wilder, along with Shakespeare, as one of their favorite all-time playwrights. You've also directed Shakespeare. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. I think that's how why they asked me to do this, actually,
because it's
after Amadeus, it's big comedy. I think I can maneuver a little less than 20 people on stage fairly well, and I enjoy the challenge of it.
So this is, I don't want to get into necessarily to your whole resume here, but I just realized that you've directed big shows, Shakespeare, Amadeus at Live Arts, and now Matchmaker, all big casts, lots of different characters. Is that something you were looking to do, or something that you just have the ability to handle? So,
you know, it is something I'm looking to do, and it's the exact opposite of the kind of show I want to act in. I like bare stages, raw action for acting, modern, simple. But for directing, I love the orchestration of it, finding the rhythms. I love comedy and milking every comedic moment for all it's worth. So yeah, this is my type of gig as a director. I eat it up.
I think of comedy as something that is spontaneous, but is there preparation, or what type of preparation could you do to get ready to do a comedy?
There's a general mood in comedy that you have to get into. There's a general, your normal boundaries as a realistic actor, especially in farce, you have to widen those. You push the envelope more. You can't burst the bubble, but you can push the envelope. So another thing I did was watch a lot of Buster Keaton.
Yeah.
All those guys, Laurel and Hardy. Because they were so good at taking a little moment, like leaving a room, they turn it into a comedic thing because of their rhythm or the little twist they put on it. So we did work a lot with my our movement coach and choreographer, Marianne Kubik, on just redefining ourselves as actors in a farce, in a comedy, and having our entire bodies and voices and imaginations available. And then, of course, there's been really wonderful things that have come up spontaneously in rehearsal. I cast people based on their ability to take direction and their instincts on stage and their bravery. Not if they can come into a room and sidle into a character. It's the risks they're willing to take, because that's where the comedy is going to come from.
And on that movement note, is there also... I mean, it's set in 1905?
The 80s.
Oh, the 1880s. So, yeah, so is there a periodness to the... You said Marianne was working with the movement. Is there also a periodness to the movement? That's
yes,
important?
And a lot of that just comes from the costumes. If you're wearing a corset with a bustle, if you're a man in a suit in clothes back then that didn't stretch, you can't do things with your body that you normally can. But how we used these rules was to learn the rules and what they would be so we could break them and choose when we break them. And it becomes very funny.
Well, I know it's a four-act play, and it's got a lot of characters, but is there a way that you could, without a spoiler warning, give us a summary, a synopsis of the play?
Sure. Well, we start off in Horace Vandegelder's house and shop in Yonkers, New York. He's a fairly well-to-do businessman who's worked his way up. And in the meantime of having to fight for his living, he has safely tucked his heart away and locked it up. And that affects everyone around him. Love is very frivolous to him. But in comes Dolly. And Dolly's goal in life is to make sure that people live it and to make sure people end up in love and having a really good time. So she comes into this world, she shakes things up, and they're all the better at the end of it.
So there was something in the director's notes, your director's notes, that I read about Thornton Wilder saying his plays are like a blank check, and the actors and the director can fill in the amount or something.
Yes, put their own signature on them. Yes, this has my signature all over it. Yes, wanted to keep it set in the 1880s, but another thing you learn to do in directing school is to look at other productions of the show and the reviews and the director's notes from those shows, and I found so many productions that have been done that spoke to something like, oh, let's harken back to an old-fashioned, good old American time. And because it's farce, too, and because there's so much kind of like vaudeville type of shtick going on and characters, I didn't and never want a play that the audience can kind of sit back removed from and just be like, oh, isn't that a nice little relic from the past? Oh, how neat. No. So I you know, I did my own stuff to it. I see a lot of parallels between the Gilded Age of the 1880s and the Gilded Age of the 1980s, and I can't be too specific, but we have worked those things in. Another concept we came to it with was, how do we dust off this old, lesser-known play of Wilder's and find surprises within? And that's a theme that really went into our set design, kind of this play being an old magic little box that we're going to crack open and hopefully surprise everyone with.
Yeah, that's nice. I hope to... I've seen the set. I've seen the... it still needs a little paint. But the floor's done and the boxes are in, and I hope to talk to Mary Butcher, the set designer, about that later. So in this process, were there things that surprised you about the play, about the... Or was there nothing that surprised you about the whole process?
Oh, there's always a lot of surprises. But, you know, one of my tendencies as a director is that I over-design and over-direct in all those months before you have actors in the room. Then I auditioned and I cast it. And as we rehearsed it, it just got more meaningful and deeper. And you really see what's so beautiful about this play, and it's not that it's just a good time, and it is a good time, and there's nothing wrong with laughter for laughter's sake. Laughter is very powerful and holy to me, I guess you could say. But there's a lot of heart in it, and Thornton Wilder is really charging us to go out and live our lives in a really meaningful way and to take risks.
Well, thank you, Mendy.
Thank you, Ray.
I'm looking forward to it. I've read the play before. I'm very excited about seeing it, excited about you directing it in the cast. I hope to snag some of them before the tech rehearsal in just a few minutes. And Matchmaker at Live Arts Downstage opens Friday, March 6th, and runs through Saturday, March 28th.
More! Yay! Oh, my God, they're amazing. They look so good on the stage. I don't know if you saw them. Look at that one. That's horribly wonderful.
Why don't you come over here and introduce yourself to the microphone?
Can we have a shitload of pins?
Well, we're looking at now, I'm not kidding you, a basket full of hats. This is Sarah Holden.
Oh, we're recording now?
Yeah, no, we're recording. We're still recording. And Sarah, and what is her name?
Meredith.
Meredith has a name tag on. I could have read the name tag. So, Sarah, what is your role with the Matchmaker?
I'm the costume designer, and Meredith is the lovely dresser.
So you have a basket full of hats. Does everyone have a hat?
Almost everyone except for one person, I think, wears something ridiculous on their head at one point.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's more hats than characters?
Yes, by far. Probably twice that many.
But there's a character who's a hat maker, right?
She what?
In the shop? There's a character who's a hat maker.
Yes, a milliner's.
A milliner's.
She does such a lovely job.
Yes. So come see the hats and see Sarah's fine work and Meredith's fine dressing.
Indeed.
Thank you for stopping by.
And they're off.
I'm here now outside the scene shop because the scene shop was too noisy with set designer Mary Butcher. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Ray.
And you are currently... what is your role here at Live Arts? Before we get into the whole set of Matchmaker.
Well, I started a year ago as a volunteer, and over the summer I was asked to become an intern. So I basically work in the scenic shop and do a lot of the painting and do some construction work. And then I was asked to do Matchmaker.
To design the set?
Yes.
For Matchmaker. Is it the first set that you've designed for Live Arts?
Yes. And it's my first set that I've ever designed by myself.
Oh, great. So, had you read the play? How long ago was, or, you know, have you read the play, like, in school or anywhere else before you came across it?
No. My mom is really into musicals, so I'd seen Hello, Dolly. And that's all I knew about it.
That this is the play from which Hello, Dolly is, the musical is based. Mm-hmm. How did you approach, I guess in general first, then maybe some specifics later, the overall process of working on the set? I mean, just tell me what it would be like. What is it like?
Well, because I have an architecture background, I started with what we do in architecture, based study of the entire show. And working with Bloom on Oklahoma last semester, I did
these. And Bloom is?
Tom Bloom is the professor of set design at UVA.
Yes.
And I got to work with him as the assistant designer for Oklahoma. And for that show, I basically studied the characters and did image studies and my emotions. And that's how I approached Matchmaker. And from that point, after I've gotten all my emotions of the show out, I went to basic structure designs and how I wanted the space to lay out, because with my architecture background, that's what I'm used to. And I ended up talking to Professor Frick at the university, and he had done a version of Matchmaker quite a few years ago and worked with Mindy St. Hours before, and had mentioned that he, this idea of a box, and that's where that came from.
Yeah, I was going to say that, because I look at the set now, it's about a week, less than a week from opening night, and the floor looks amazing, because the floor looks like, did you paint the floor?
Yes, it took 2 days to paint the floor.
So the floor, for those of you who want to know before you come see the show, is faux painting, you would say? So it looks, it's painted, I'm going to guess the base material is plywood or Luon or?
Yeah, it's just a basic wood base, and then we use a cream color for just an overall base, roughly put down. And then I use two different brushes that have been beaten up over the years on bamboo sticks, and I dip it in a tobacco-colored brown and do a long streak of that, then dip that in water and do a wash over that, and then take a dry brush of honey. And
of actual honey?
Honey color. Oh. Not of actual honey. They're not going to be sticking to the floor. But yeah, a color of honey, and then do a light grain over top of that. And then we put Vectra on top of it to protect it. From
and
being
what is Vectra?
Vectra is something Grady's been using. I don't
to
really
seal
know.
The floor.
It seals the floor. He gets it from a cleaning supply shop. So.
And the final result of the floor is that it looks like, to me, a hardwood floor in a turn of the century that's 19th to 20th century. Turn of the century warehouse or store,
yes.
Old wooden board store, as was the style then. This would be in New York?
Yes, in Yonkers, and then we moved to New York City itself.
Does the floor change when it moves to New York City, or is the floor
no,
consistent?
No, it stays throughout. The basis of the if you take everything off the stage, the idea is that you're in a warehouse, Van der Gelder's warehouse. And so the back of the wall is actually going to have Van der Gelder's name painted on it. Like if you look over at South Street across the way, they have the name actually painted on the building with
right,
a border
right.
around it. That's what right. the that's what's going on the back wall. And then it's just basically Van der Gelder's shop.
And then you said boxes. Back to the boxes idea, because the other thing that's on the set now, maybe finished construction still being painted, some fine-tuning and casters and stuff are... It looks like all movable pieces.
Yes, we have three rotating units, as I call them. There's a window unit, a wardrobe unit, and then the plain wall unit. And basically, the idea behind it is they'll all be facing one direction in the first act. The next act, they'll all be rotated the same way. And the next act, they'll just continually rotate until you get to the final act, and something magical happens.
And it's a four-act play?
Yes.
And there's four sides to the...
Yes.
They're not cubes, because they're taller than they are... wide, but they look like big moving wardrobes or puppet show.
Yes, hot dog stands as
hot
we've been calling
stands,
them,
yeah.
And puppets. But they do, and the idea is that they look like pieces of furniture or magical boxes. We actually started out thinking that maybe the show was a magic show, and that's where we went from that, and it's now morphed into this what we have now.
It looks, also the other thing it does, because I know the show has a big cast, I don't know exactly how many characters are on stage all at one time, but a lot of the space is being used. It's a big space. I mean, the use of the space is using the whole width of the stage.
Yeah.
Just like the dance concert that was here in January. And is that something that you wanted to keep that openness, or give you the ability to change the set for acts, or did Mendy want that, or?
It was a combination. Basically, when I talked to Mendy, the idea was that this was a small world, all in Yonkers, and it was all Van der Gelder and Dolly, and it's just this little tiny world, and then Dolly's coming in and bringing in this spice to life, and it's kind of dull at first, and every single act gets a little bit brighter, and more things happen, bigger things happen, mm-hmm. until you get to Flores, where, as we've been calling it, the carnival. At the end. Mm-hmm. So it was this idea that at first it's very enclosed in a small space, and then slowly the boxes will spread out, they'll expand and become larger, and in the end something magical happens.
Oh, so they open up and open up and up and up and fill the space.
Yes.
So how was this process for you? You're right in the thick of it now, but have you enjoyed it? Would you consider doing it again?
After working in Oklahoma, I was a little nervous because it's such a big production, and I'm glad I got to work with Professor Bloom on it and gave me some insight and some ideas of how to work with the theater space, which I had no idea how things would move. And at the beginning of the process, I was nervous. I was terrified, and I wasn't sure. Maybe set design isn't for me. And as it's continued, and I've especially working with Mendy and her whole, when I first met her and decided to do Matchmaker, she said that I want as many ideas as I can, and then I just want to throw out as many as I can. So that idea that it's constantly changing and morphing in this temporal art, which I love about this theater. And so as the process has been going, I've fallen more in love with set design, and I would love to continue doing it.
Well, the set looks great. The floor looks great. I can't wait to see it all put together. Matchmaker at Live Arts on the Downstage opens March 6th. Thank you, Mary.
Thanks.
And I can't wait to see the set and the lights and the whole show come together.
Great.
Thanks. That's beautiful stuff. Okay, I'm now in a rehearsal room, rehearsal A, with four fine-looking, talented actors who make up just a small part of this huge cast of The Matchmaker. Hello to you all.
Hello.
I'm going to ask you first to introduce yourselves and the character you play, and that's it. No big monologues. So, Chris?
This is Chris Patrick, and I play Casey Wagner. No, I play Cornelius.
This is Casey Wagner, and I play Barnaby Tucker.
This is Denise Stewart, and I'm playing Dolly Levi.
And this is Chris Ballmer, and I play Horace Vandergelder.
So Dolly Levi, as if many people don't know, is then the character, the title character of the musical that's based on The Matchmaker. Hello, Dolly.
Yes, hello.
Nothing to do with this play, but I'm just trying
that's
to throw
right.
you off as
Oh, it has
as
a lot to do with this play. So.
Oh, because it's based on this play.
It's true.
So why don't you tell me, this is Denise Stewart again, who is going to now tell us a little bit about, a little in-depth into her take on the character of Dolly.
Well, Dolly's a matchmaker. She's a widow, and she's putting her life together by doing everything from guitar lessons to selling hose, and so she also makes matches. And when we find the day of the play, she's going to Horace Vandergelder's house to help make a match for him, which he thinks is about another woman.
And Vandergelder here, Chris Ballmer.
Yeah.
What's your take on Vandergelder?
He's a grouchy old man. Well, that's part of a reasonably successful grouchy old man. Made a lot of money in the feed and provision business over the years, and he's a widower. You know, his wife died quite a while ago. So he's made a lot of money, and he treats people not very well.
Not a nice guy. But feed and provision does not sound like the year 2009. It sounds more like, what year does the play take place?
Late 1880s.
Big,
in Yonkers. Well, Yonkers in New York City.
Yes, starts in Yonkers.
Right.
Moves to New York City. Over to Casey Wagner now, who is sometimes portrayed by Chris Patrick. Casey Wagner, your character again, and a little bit about your take on the character.
Well, my character is Barnaby Tucker, and he is a, quote, good-for-nothing apprentice in Mr. Vandergelder's place of business.
Is that his own quote or someone else's quote about him?
It's not. I think, is that your quote or it might be another character's quote? I think it's Malachi's quote, who is a
brings up good nothing apprentices.
Yeah. So he's a lovable, innocent, good for nothing.
Sounds like typecasting. And Chris Patrick, you are?
I am Cornelius Hackle. I'm the other worker in Mr. Vandergelder's shop, and I've been chief clerk for 10 years, and when the play gets started, he promotes me to chief clerk. Much to Cornelius's chagrin. So
that's how promotions still go nowadays. So you
it's a lateral move.
tell me a little bit about the storyline of the two of you, of Cornelius and of Barnaby.
Well, we are much oppressed by Mr. Vandergelder, and when the play opens, everybody is headed off to New York. Cornelius, feeling a bit put down by being promoted to a job that he thought he already had, decides that he and Barnaby need to head off to New York and start to live themselves. So that's where their little adventure starts.
Yes.
Well, looky here, looky here. Talented actress, Seville Actress of the Year, something.
Please.
Rhonda Ewart has just walked into the room.
Yes, I'm very late. I apologize.
Hi, Rhonda. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm sure good. You know these ne'er-do-wells.
I think I do.
Which surround you.
They look familiar.
So they've all taken the time to, like a big task. They've all taken the time to show up on time. They've all taken the time to introduce themselves, their character, and a little bit about their character.
Mm. Well, I'm Rhonda Hugh, and I'm playing Irene Malloy, who is the proprietor of a hat shop in New York City. She's a widow, and she hates hats. She hates the business that she's in. She's been in it for quite some time, and is looking for a great adventure. She's had a great love with her husband who passed away, but is now seeking new adventures and new love, and it happens to all walk in the door one day.
Is this a comic setup with Vandergelder losing his wife and you losing your husband? Is there something... I don't want a plot spoiler! But, okay, so where were we on the storyline here? We pretty much covered it, right? What is... Have we covered it?
No, I don't think we've covered
we
it.
Okay.
These two, Barnaby and Cornelius, are going to New York to seek for adventure, but it just happens at the same time that Vandergelder has also decided to go to New York to have this date, but I'm not going to let him go by himself. So I chaperone his date, and then Cornelius ends up meeting Mrs. Malloy, and then lots of exciting things transpire after that. That really gets everything
going. Where do they meet?
Going. Her hat shop.
The Lots hat of adventures shop. In the hat
oh,
shop.
Oh, yes. Man.
Lots of
if we
doors,
only knew what so. Went on in a hat shop. But you will find out.
We'll find out. Yes. You have to come see the play to see what happens in the hat shop. So, Denise, have we now covered the story plot, or do we need more?
Well, I think we're at the place where it gets really exciting. So I think
it's really
that's
exciting.
Everyone should come to see the play and see what happens. It's a farce.
Excellent. So let's let me talk a little bit about comedy. About I want to talk about anybody... particularly who's first, before we get to the comedy, who has had a long...
Let's do the tragedy.
Yeah, that's totally us.
Before, has anyone here had a long, like, history with this part or with this play? Have they done it before? Have they read it, you know, 20 years ago, always wanted to do it or something like that? Speak if you have that experience.
Yeah, I can speak to that. When I was a little girl, I loved Hello, Dolly as the musical. Would sing, you know, all that, even though I'm not a good singer, but I would pretend that I was, you know, Barbara Streisand and all that stuff. So I loved it as a little girl, so much so that I told my mom I loved it so much and wanted to be Dolly Levi, actually, when I grew up.
Now they fight.
And now the actress is fighting. Yes, but I didn't know how wonderful Irene Malloy was at that time, so I want to disclaim that right now.
You wouldn't want my part?
So much so that my mother told the sort of music/drama teacher of this private secret that I had. And then the teacher gave me an article on Hello, Dolly that Carol Channing had it and said, someday you'll be in this. So it was sort of like a little childhood thing. And I saw Carol Channing actually about 12 years ago in a national tour of it.
Jealous.
I saw the same thing. I saw the same national tour.
Yeah. 96.
Yes.
Doing
I saw
it again.
In Seattle. Yes.
Wow. How'd they get her up there?
Oh, she was kicking.
Oh, she was. Man. And she could put food in her mouth, that woman.
Oh, that's a challenge.
Yeah.
So, then the rest of you, you read the play, you come audition for it, you get cast, and then you start the process. So I think in this case, not knowing if you're going to be cast or not, then the actor's work really starts, for the audition, of course, it starts before the audition, but it starts after you're cast. And would someone like to take it up from then, how they went to approach this? I mean, did rehearsal start right away? What was it like just in the beginning process of rehearsal for this play?
Yeah, we started right in with, you know, walking through the show and you know, and working with scripts in our hand. We also started working with a movement person right away so that all the characters would have a particular, and this leads into the comedy, but each character would have a particular way of moving that was appropriate to their, both their character, their intention in the play, and also the comic possibilities of that character and how they were different from other characters in the play.
And who was the movement coach, teacher?
Her name is Marianne Kubik. She's a UVA movement professor, and Live Arts has given her a fellowship where she is the movement coach for four of our productions. And the first one was Visit to a Small Planet, and this is the second of the four.
Oh, great, because I would guess that the rest of the season with Tartuffe, maybe?
Yes.
And Accidental Death,
yes,
of an anarchist, have very distinct, and Matchmaker, very distinct like periods and movement and comedy.
Well, right, good. Right.
Well, good. Casey,
yes,
what was it like for you when you got cast and you began your process of preparing to master this role?
What was it like? Well, I won't lie that I wanted Barnaby desperately. And I had read the play about a year before the audition, and then I read it again before the audition. So I, you know, had a thought or two going in, like really, really wanting it. And then when I got it, I read the play two more times. And one thought that I had, which ended up being Mendy's thought, was there's a lot of sort of young innocence in Barnaby. And I don't know if anyone here watches 30 Rock.
Yes.
The
Tina
TV
Fey
show.
Yes, on NBC Thursday nights. But there's a character called Kenneth. And it was funny because I had sort of thought of Barnaby as sort of a Kenneth character. And just randomly one day, Mendy had the exact same thought, completely independently of me. So that's sort of where Barnaby grows from.
Well, then I look for you to steal the show, because often Kenneth steals 30 Rock in his page boy coat. So Chris Patrick, how's it been for you in the developing your character role? Anything that you surprised you or
well, I feel like I'm sort of aging out of these kinds of roles. So
how old is your character?
Well, he's not that much younger than me. He's 33 and I'm 37. I am 37. And but you know, there is something of the innocent ingenue about him, even though he may have a tiny bit more experience than Barnaby. It's really not much. He hasn't really been out in the world, and there's something very fun about playing that kind of ingenue, innocent, wide-eyed, discovering the world for the first time kind of character. So that's been the most fun part for me, I think, is to play a character of that type.
Yeah, and Denise, what about you? Now, I've seen you do some pretty extreme comedy. Is that this case, too?
I think that we've been...
Extreme comedy.
Yeah, extreme.
It's like a competition.
Yes, there'll be watermelons and axes. We have been really encouraged to be big and to be clear and to and not drop lines. Things like that where you think you're being funny because you maybe in your regular conversation you'd undercut something or say something lower, and it's normally funny, but in this kind of comedy we are all learning that you want to take it to the next level and not drop the energy. So that's been a really good lesson. I don't know that I've ever played the lead. So this is new. This has really been new for me, and really enjoying costumes and makeup and hair.
So, she's a girly girl.
I do. I really like that component, and I think we have fabulous costumes for this show, and it's been very exciting to lace up in a corset every night and put on these costumes. It's very fun to play period, especially when you get to play period comedy.
And speaking of lacing up in corsets, Chris Ballmer, how's it been for you, the costumes and the hats and the world that you've entered?
Yeah, all good fun. I mean, I actually grew up in New York, so, and in a German and Dutch part of Manhattan. So the fact that a lot of the background of this play is, I grew up a little later than this play is set.
A little.
But some of that history is kind of interesting to me. But the character I'm playing, and a couple of things that, you know, I had to wrestle with this character is that he's funny in the play, but he doesn't have really much of a sense of humor. I mean,
right.
He's not intentionally funny. she's a bit of a stiff in a lot of ways. I mean, that changes somewhat over the course of the play, but getting that kind of rigidness without, and doing it for real, I mean, being unpleasant to people and being very caught up in his own stuff and his own money and bossing people around and not caring what other people think is, well, it's not the way I am all the time.
A little stretch.
Okay, so before we conclude here, this is an open question to anyone because it is. I'd like to know stuff that has happened along the way that has surprised you or that has or delighted you or that or maybe Rhonda, I can start with you. Like you were saying before about how your character is much richer than you had thought when you were 11.
Well, you know, when you're 11, it's the big Hello Dolly character just sort of jumps out at you. But Irene has been a pleasure to play. She's just so lively, and there's great aspects to sort of her character that I've enjoyed getting to know. And so that's been a new in nuance for me because I came in just only knowing the more of the Hello Dolly kind of aura, and it's been a pleasure to do the role. So, what was your question?
What does it feel like to be 11? So, thank you very much for your time. This is where you say, no, thank you. And Matchmaker opens March 6th on the Downstage at Live Arts. Closes March 28th, so you only have 4 weeks to see it, and then it's gone. Don't miss it. Go to livearts.org or call the box office for more information. Thank you, Chris, Denise, Rhonda, Casey, and Chris Patrick, who plays Casey.
Thank you.
That's right.
You're going to confuse them.
Ah, oh, they're confused already. Thank you.
Still in the rehearsal room, just about 5 days away from opening night, and I'm here with Carol Pedersen. Hello, Carol.
Hello, Ray.
And Carol is, if I have this correct, the assistant director and acting coach for Matchmaker, which, as you may know by now listening to this podcast, opens March 6th, right. 5 days away.
Right.
So how has it been going for you?
Well, it's been a terrifically interesting process. The play presents itself initially as a farce, and that's what Mendy's approach to it was. But as we've worked on it longer and longer, there are these moments in the play that quite veer away from farce, and we realize that there is something at work underneath all the farce, which is typical of Thornton Wilder's
Carol is a walking library of knowledge of theater and playwrights, yeah. And so would you mind just talking about Thornton Wilder, his life, or his themes?
I'm a big Thornton Wilder fan, as you know, Ray. I've been teaching a course in the Actors Lab for the past couple of weeks and for a few more called Acting Wilder, which is in conjunction with the production, and the class is all going to go see The Matchmaker. But so we've had a chance in class to really sort of dig into the three major plays, that is Our Town, Matchmaker, and The Skin of Our Teeth. And the more we've worked on them, the more fascinating his whole playwriting approach becomes, because nothing is as simple as it seems on the surface in Wilder. Even take a play like Our Town, which was his first major playwriting success. The simplicity of the staging is legendary, and it had a huge effect on playwrights who came after Wilder, because they were suddenly freed from, well, not suddenly, but freed from the idea that they had to do a realistic play in a realistic set. And so Our Town was a great gift, not just to the American public and the world, actually, but also to playwrights. And in Our Town, for instance, what looks like in many productions a little Hallmark card to the values of turn of the century American life, mm-hmm. that really isn't what drives the play. And the this past week a production opened in New York that was brought in from Chicago, and that's a small theater in the village where the production is done with the audience on three sides. And in the third act, there is a big surprise in the staging that has set the audience, you know, going out of the theater in tears. And yeah, so they have sort of uncovered another layer of theatrical thrust of the play in this production. So part of what we did in The Matchmaker was, as we went along, there were four major monologues by four of the characters. And in these monologues, each one of them reveals a side of him or herself that is not farcical. Even Vandegelder, who is the miser in the play, right in the first act, steps forward and delivers a monologue in which we find out that there is more to the guy than just this cranky old skinflint that we see. And so that prepares you in a way for looking for other meanings. But anyway, I hope that with our production, which has a lot of farcical elements in it, in addition to the ones that are in the play, and some of the directorial touches and things are wonderful old shtick that you see in old farces and things like that, that we've managed to sort of balance that aspect of it out with trying to pay enough attention to those monologues. Wilder won three Pulitzer Prizes. He's the only American who has ever gotten a Pulitzer Prize, both in fiction and playwriting. His first Pulitzer Prize was for The Bridge of San Luis Rey, a novel.
Oh.
And then after that, he wrote Our Town immediately after, and that got him his first Pulitzer Prize in drama.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wrote, almost immediately after Our Town, he wrote The Merchant of Yonkers, which was the first version of The Matchmaker. And The Merchant of Yonkers flopped. He wrote it really for Max Reinhardt, the German director.
Mm-hmm.
And Reinhardt brought all of his European stagecraft to it. But there was something about the play that he didn't quite get.
Mm-hmm.
And so it flopped, and that was that. And then Wilder wrote Skin of Our Teeth, for which he won another Pulitzer mm-hmm. Prize. And then at the urging of Tyrone Guthrie, the British director, he rewrote The Merchant of Yonkers, and it became The Matchmaker. And it was produced first at Edinburgh and then brought to London, and it was a big success. And then finally brought over to New York, where again it was a big success. And I have a wonderful piece by Guthrie about the world of Thornton Wilder. And he writes, in The Matchmaker, Wilder is apparently aiming at quite another target than in Our Town or The Skin of Our Teeth. The Matchmaker makes absolutely no attempt to explore new theatrical territory. On the contrary, it is a farce in the most traditional style, making use of many of the familiar devices which have been employed in farce from Aristophanes to Three Men on a Horse: mistaken identity, hiding under tables and in cupboards, men dressed up as women, and lost purses. Although at first glance the technique may seem entirely different from that of his other plays, there is one point of essential similarity. There is no attempt to make the audience accept illusion. Just as in Our Town and The Skin of Our Teeth, so the audience at The Matchmaker is not asked to believe itself anywhere but at the theater. You can tell from the beginning that there is no fourth wall, really. You know, Vandegelder's monologue comes pretty early on in the first act, and so then the audience knows that they are in the theater for sure.
So this is something that's a little bit outside of The Matchmaker, but something you said earlier, which is that you're currently teaching a class focusing on acting Wilder. Are there more classes like that, or is there more information you can share about the class you're teaching now?
Oh, yeah. When the current class is over, at the end of March, I'm going to start another class called Discovering Style, which is related to the next two productions coming up at Live Arts. We're doing Tartuffe by Molière, and The Accidental Death of an Anarchist by Dario Fo, and both Molière and Fo are masters of the comic style. So the class is opening up the question of exploring what is comic style. How do you, as an actor, approach a 17th century French play that is written in couplets, rhyming couplets? How is that different? What kind of skills do you need as opposed to, say, doing an Arthur Miller play? And they are a different skill set. And a wonderful thing for the actors, from my point of view, is the opportunity to explore different styles and discover things about themselves as actors that maybe they're not aware of. You know, do they have a funny bone? And if so, can they make somebody else laugh? You
know? Well, I think that all sums up what people can expect to see if they come to see The Matchmaker.
Right, exactly.
You know, because they'll see it'll be something funny and it'll dance that line between looking at people being funny and looking at yourself.
Yes, and you should go out of the theater looking at yourself.
And laughing.
Yes, and laughing.
Well, thank you, Carol.
Thank you, Ray. It's been fun to talk to you.
And you too. So Matchmaker opens March 6th, Friday, March 6th. It runs through March 28th. 4 weeks to see the show. Go to livearts.org or call the box office for more information.